This is actually a small engine we're using to do particulate filter development work, used for transportable refrigeration units. We'll probably be running for about 5 hours.
I'm Dan Carter. I'm a mechanical engineer. I grew up in Wood County in a small town called Mineral Wells, actually Grassy Run Road, and came to West Virginia University. I'm now the director for CAFE, the Center for Alternative Fuels, Engines, and Emissions here at West Virginia University. We are a research enterprise within the Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering Department. Our center has been around for 25 years. We've done about $100 million worth of research, and I've been involved in the center from its inception.
46-year-old Dan Carter leads a team of faculty members, staff engineers, technicians, and more than 30 master's and PhD students. They carry out pioneering emissions research and testing, from mining equipment to refrigeration units to heavy-duty trucks to passenger vehicles, using all kinds of fuels, gasoline, diesel, biodiesel, hybrid, and electric systems. They're trying to find that perfect balance among competing needs of power, fuel economy, fuel efficiency, and low emissions. First, I'm getting a tour of their research building. Upstairs are giant exhaust systems which simulate what happens in a car or big truck, so that researchers can test whether or not a vehicle meets federal regulations.
These are referred to as dilution tunnels. Basically, this is a large filtration unit here, HEPA filters. Conditioned air is brought in, so we control for temperature and humidity. We then mix that air with exhaust inside this tube. That simulates kind of what happens at the tailpipe of the engine. And at the end of this tube, you'll see there's a number of probes and sampling tubes. And that's how we extract off small portions to actually look at the exhaust.
They then test the exhaust for particulate matter, gases, and other chemicals. Although this is a world-class facility, a lot of the testing equipment isn't commercially available.
A lot of this welding I did myself when myself and another technician were working on, a couple engineers, working on building this. Most of the systems we have here, we design in-house. Even the large physical systems like this, the fabrication and welding is all done in-house by, you know, many of the researchers or our engineering and technical staff. Students get involved as well, and probably one of the biggest questions I'm asked by undergraduate students when they come to us is, you know, can I learn how to weld? And I said, sure, you know, let's go back in the room and I'll sit down with them for 20 minutes or so, put a hood on them, and we learn how to stick two pieces of metal together.
And they are pioneers in the way they test engines. In the late 1990s, there was very little data about how engines behaved in the real world. Everything was tested inside in a lab, either on a machine called an engine dynamometer, or dyno, or a giant vehicle treadmill called a chassis dynamometer. Then, Dan and his team at CAFE built the first mobile emissions testing unit. It's attached to the back of a vehicle to test engine emissions on the road. In 1998, using this method, the CAFE team discovered that some heavy-duty diesel engines that would not have passed U.S. emission standards out on the road were using cheat devices that allowed the engines to pass U.S. emission standards in a lab. Despite this pioneering work, CAFE's accomplishments went mostly unsung outside the industry. But then, everything changed. Friday, September 18th, 2015.
We were doing work just like any other day. I was actually in the emissions test cell at our research lab. My cell phone had been ringing, but I'd had it on a windowsill ledge kind of charging. Like, I walked over to the phone and you know, noticed there had been a number of missed calls and numbers I didn't recognize. Turned around to go back to what we were doing, and the phone rang again. So then it was kind of out of frustration, I think. I picked the phone up, and I probably wasn't very cordial when I answered. Yeah, the lady on the other line said, I'm so-and-so from, and I believe it was NBC News. I wanted to have a couple words with you. Do you have a moment? And I said, I probably answered something like, sure. And she said, you have no idea why I'm calling you. And I said, no, absolutely not. And she said, well, I'm going to give you a few moments to go check the news and collect your thoughts, and I'll call you back in about 5 minutes.
Dan checked the internet and learned that one small project that he and a team of five at CAFE carried out in 2013 and 2014 showed that the world's largest automaker at the time, Volkswagen, was using a clever scam to beat emissions tests. It programmed the car's onboard computer with what is known as a defeat device to make it seem that their diesel cars were burning cleaner than they actually were. When the team from WVU took the cars out on the road for testing, two Volkswagen models registered anywhere from 10 to 35 times the government emissions guidelines. At the time, the CAFE team thought perhaps this was just some problem that Volkswagen could easily fix. But the EPA then did their own testing, which confirmed CAFE's findings, and they announced it publicly in September 2015.
I knew it the instant, you know, the reports were already, you know, this is going to be a billions of dollar settlement. So I called the dean of College of Engineering, and he said I should contact Dr. Fred King, who's the VP of research here at WVU. So I called Fred, and I said that the data that we presented ended up being used and then viewed by the regulators, and they have gone after Volkswagen.
It was interesting because Dan was his usual kind of low-key self, and then he starts to sort of unfold what this is about, and I'm thinking, wow, this is a pretty amazing story.
I said that it's going to be a $20 billion fine, and he said, wow, $20 million is a lot of money. And I said, yeah, Fred, 20 million is, but 20 billion is even more. And he said, oh, you said B as in billion. And I said, yes. He said, oh, my goodness, you need to call legal. So
the announcement unleashed a firestorm of media coverage of what Volkswagen had done and the little team at West Virginia University who had discovered their deception. 4 days later, Volkswagen said that 11 million of their diesel vehicles worldwide had been fitted with the cheating device. The same day, the president and CEO of Volkswagen's U.S. group, Michael Horn, admitted that the company had totally screwed up.
The CEO of our parent company, Dr. Martin Winterkorn, said yesterday, Volkswagen will fully cooperate with the responsible agencies, and much, much more important, as I see it, he stated that he was personally and deeply sorry for this, that Volkswagen has broken the trust of our customers and the public here in America.
The next day, Martin Winterkorn, the top CEO at Volkswagen, resigned. Dan Carter and his colleagues at CAFE were shocked by the whole scandal. They really like diesel technology, and they want it to succeed.
From an engineering standpoint, the diesel engine has inherent advantages. There's a propensity to have, you know, lower greenhouse gas emissions, are more efficient, yet have very good performance, good fuel economies. We were there banging the diesel drum.
In the days and weeks that followed, Dan Carter and other members of the team did dozens of interviews with major U.S. television networks, newspapers, and magazines. But it was an even bigger story abroad. Journalists called from Britain, Germany, Italy, Australia, and Japan.
And Dan, who is this very unassuming, very modest, very humble guy, became the center of attention around the world.
Gordon Gee, president of West Virginia University.
Volkswagen has ultimately settled for at least $20 billion, and they have a lot of other work to do. And CAFE has become one of the most central places in this country, if not in the world, where admissions tests take place because it's now become a gold standard.
Besides greater attention to West Virginia University's research capabilities, the uncovering of the Volkswagen scandal brought unexpected results. Fred King, Vice President for Research at WVU.
Just last week, we received a message from a member of our Board of Governors, and he was at a meeting of international business leaders in California. And a gentleman noticed that he had the flying WV on his shirt and said, oh, are you from West Virginia University? And he said, yes, I am. And at that point, the person who was with German businesses said, I want you to know the phenomenal impact that the Volkswagen work has had on changing how German businesses view business ethics. Certainly when Dan Carter and his group, they've been doing this work for 20 plus years, they never dreamed that one day what they did would change the way businesses internationally operate.
So, Gene, this is where I grew up. Pretty rural setting. Farms all around us.
We're standing on a hillside behind Dan Carter's childhood home, up Grassy Run Road, a few miles outside Mineral Wells, West Virginia.
The summer times were filled with, you know, riding motorcycles and bicycles and working in hay fields. In the fall, of course, you know, we were always outside. The parents didn't worry. They knew they were a holler away that we would come running. It's amazing to come back and see, you know, the change in the area, but this area stayed relatively untouched. And my nieces now kind of do the same things that I did when I was that age. I was actually born in Weston in Lewis County. My parents moved to Wood County the next year, and my dad was a union iron worker. So, you know, he kind of followed where the work was. At that time, the Mid-Ohio Valley was growing at DuPont and GE. The plants were booming, Kaiser Aluminum. They moved to a trailer in Parkersburg, South Side. And then 73, they moved into a trailer in Mineral Wells.
Then in 1976, Carter's parents, Dick and Helen Carter, built this house for the family, Dan and his sister Becky. Dick Carter died in 2015, and today Becky lives with her family next door, Dan's mother, Helen Carter.
Dan was a good child. He was a good child. If he was told to do something, we didn't have to second-guess ourselves that he was going to do it. He always trying to figure out how to take things apart and put them together. His daddy was that way. Bicycles. Can't remember what birthday it was, the first one. Maybe he was 4 or 5. And I think probably before the kids left the party, the bicycle was already being taken apart.
Not long after that, Dan was tinkering with tractors and cars and taking them apart too. But he also did well at school.
It always came easy to me. I remember first grade, they were wanting to skip me in school. We grew up in a Christian home. My mom, you know, took my sister and I to church from the time we were small. So it was always, you know, be very humble. She would have nothing to do with me skipping because that was pretentious or bragging.
One day the teacher had called me at home and she said, Danny is very irritated because he gets his work done and the other kids aren't finished and he doesn't know what to do. And I said, well, what my suggestion for you to be is the kids that are slow, put Danny with them so he can help them along the way.
That's what I did. I would finish with my stuff and I would, you know, get extra handouts and take them to some of the students and work with them. My elementary school was a three-room schoolhouse. It's now a hardware store.
The hardware store to your right, that was my elementary school for the first 3 years, so kindergarten, first, and second. My first church, Mount Zion Baptist.
So, old church, 1815.
Mm-hmm. Old church, and we were there until I was 10, 11 years old. And it was really active in the church, did a lot of singing and playing in the church, and did choir group that would, you know, would go around other area churches and put on little plays or you know, musicals. It was a good time.
When he was in the ninth grade, he walked in from school that evening and he said, Mom, I decided today what I want to do when I get through school. And I said, and that is, and he said, I want to be a mechanical engineer.
I knew young, I wanted to be a mechanical engineer. I'm a huge Ford guy. So my only goal was to go work at Ford Motor Company.
And I said, son, that's all well and good and it sounds great. But I said, where are me and your dad going to be able to get the money to be able to put you through school? Because we didn't have it, and neither of our families had money to do that. And he said, I'm sure that you and Dad will find a way.
I'm Becky Melrose. I am Dan Carter's sister. I remember he would like to tear my cars apart to put in stereo systems. I would just want just a little new radio. And by the time he was done, I would go out and he'd have the seats tore out, the doors tore out. And by the time he was done, which was an 8-hour job, as Dan would say, would end up being 2 weeks.
But it was
introduction to what's coming in.
Introduction to what was coming.
Yes, yes, it definitely was.
On Friday nights, Saturday nights, we would cruise around town, and we would travel from Southside. We have a small park below the high school there to Parkersburg City Park. And, you know, at the park, you would pull over, and, you know, obviously everyone would pop their hood, you know, wash their car, polish their car, try to impress everyone about their car. That's about all we did. If we weren't in a garage, we were cruising this route, I think.
All through high school, work was also a big part of Dan's life. Mowing, fixing equipment, working in restaurants, and at a steel fabrication plant. Yet Dan was still a good student, a co-valedictorian at Parkersburg South High School. He would also sneak out of his AP classes to hang out with the guys in the school's auto shop. Next was West Virginia University. Carter went on to graduate first in his class in mechanical engineering, and then he landed what he thought was his dream job.
At the completion of my bachelor's degree, I got an internship at Ford at Scientific Research Labs, and that particular year they looked at resumes from around the world. I went to a long boardroom and had to answer questions fired at me from engineers around the table, and finally got to be at Ford. And, you know, it seemed like the fairy tale had come true, right?
But after a few months working at Ford, Dan Carter realized his co-workers considered it just a job. Managers at Ford were encouraging him to go on to MIT or the University of Maryland for his master's, but he decided to return to Morgantown, do his master's at WVU, and work at a new place called CAFE, the Center for Alternative Fuels, Engines, and Emissions.
What could have been the start of just a career at Ford, or maybe going on to MIT and then coming back to Ford, or coming back to Morgantown and you know, getting involved in the center. I've grown up in CAFE, so that was definitely a big turning point.
Another big turning point in Dan Carter's life came in April 2016. Time magazine listed him among the 100 most influential people in the world for the work that he and his team did in exposing a giant corporation's harmful fraud.
Dan brings to this, I think, the embodiment of the spirit of West Virginians.
Fred King.
First of all, it's an incredible work ethic. You know, students I worked with over the years like Dan, they are driven to work hard. That's sort of an instinct they have. Also, Dan is naturally curious. He is a person who, when he sees something, he notices it and he asks the right questions. Kind of a sort of native talent that Dan has is great common sense. And that's not so widely sown among everyone, I must say.
On the other side of Morgantown from CAFE's Research Center, Dan shows me a new facility in its final stages of completion.
Gene, we've just arrived at our vehicle and engine testing laboratory. We're still under construction, finalizing construction. We will eventually have 2 engine dynamometer test cells with full emissions capabilities and 2 vehicle chassis dynamometer test cells with the same emissions capabilities. This is a light-duty engine dynamometer, vehicle dynamometer, sorry.
And it looks like it's a Mercedes is being tested right now. It's the GLE 300.
This is a Mercedes diesel passenger car. This is a vehicle chassis dynamometer. We're doing some comparative work from for the mobile unit to the fixed unit on this vehicle. And we're also looking at some of the other manufacturers and you know what their performance is like.
Dan Carter believes that a testing and development facility such as this will enable the center to work hand in hand with industry, helping them to solve their problems. And he believes CAFE's greatest asset is not their experience, but the students, whose young minds aren't yet set in their ways.
Kids of tomorrow that are dreaming, that's the innovation. I mean, that's the spark. That's what you want to see. That it's not, we can't do that because I learned last semester. There's got to be a way to get there because I can envision it. And I think that's what we can provide the companies. You know, we have those young minds, and we hope to link those kids up with the industry. The match made in heaven is then they can kind of translate from here right in and hit the ground running.
So have some of your graduates from here gone straight into national and global companies?
Absolutely, yeah. My phone rings at least once a week from a company or a regulator or an independent research organization, you know, asking, okay, how many students do you have? Which ones are ready to graduate? How soon will they graduate? Most kids that leave our group have 3 or 4 job offers before they're finished writing their dissertation or thesis.
For his part, Dan Carter plans to stay right where he is. He lives with his wife, Hillary, and 3 children in rural Preston County in his beloved West Virginia.
My future, I believe our future looks very bright. My future, I intend to stay here. I'm driven by the need to try to figure out a way to bring opportunity and economic development to the state. I still think that West Virginia has some very unique people. We have a hard work ethic. You know, we're always there willing to help our neighbor out. And I think it's time now that we get together and see, you know, forget about the, you know, the Democrats and Republicans and look at what the state can do and how it can move forward. That's where I see myself. I mean, I want my future to be here in the state. I want my kids to be able to grow up here and have opportunity. And I want to be able to make a difference. When I'm retired, if I ever retire, and look back and say, you know, that was a good thing we did. Look at what we did and look at all those jobs and opportunities we developed. And that's what we need to focus on.